There's a lot of people looking for jobs right now. I'm talking to a lot of different friends who are either looking because a role has been terminated or looking because it's just that season where they're looking. And it's really about like, how do you differentiate yourself? And I always believe in going above and beyond. People are more freely sharing their thoughts now. Yesterday, I saw this really touching post on LinkedIn with someone saying like, hey, I've gone for like all of these job opportunities. I want to work. I just want to work. As I read one of the comments, they also dropped the GoFundMe link. And I went to the GoFundMe link and maybe 10,000 or 7,000 bucks had been donated from folks on LinkedIn. This type of thing was not happening on LinkedIn 2 years ago.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today's Real Talk is with a real leader who I've known for a long time. Javed Lewis is joining us from Ticketmaster, where he's the director of social. And it's actually a bit of a comeback. It's a second episode for Javed. We're catching up on his evolution and all the awesome stuff that he's been doing for such big companies. And we're also just looking at some of these pressure points, some of these pain points in social, in digital, especially in the way of establishing a voice for a brand in a really intentional way. So Javed, thanks so much for coming back on the show today.
Of course. Thanks for having me. And I do hope I'm your first repeat guest. And, you know, I reached out because I was like, all of these things have happened and I pay a lot of attention to all the cool people that you talk to normally. And I was like, I'd love to talk to you again. So I thank you for creating this forum for folks to get to talk about the different adventures that we're all on.
Yeah, absolutely. I swear, especially because you're so entrenched in the space, it makes me feel so proud and grateful that it gets through to you, that you've been watching it. I started this quite a long time ago in the midst of the pandemic, and I'm just super grateful that it's sticking to any degree. So thank you so much for sharing that. So folks, I always give you a kind of an eye into how I know my guests. And so I was working at an agency, and one of the areas that I was leading was communication, social. And I got this amazing resume from Javed, and I was like, who is this person? So he came in, and I selfishly wanted Javed on my team. We had such a great connection, so talented. But through the process, I really realized that he deserved more than what I could provide for him in that environment. So I had that conversation with him and asked him to please stay in touch. And I told him he was stuck with me until he didn't want to be. So here we are. And as you shared with me earlier, Javed, something like 10 years later.
That's a dater.
Exactly. So since then, you had such an amazing journey, and I've been so happy that you did that and that we made that, I made that call and you made that call. So most recently, you were at Twitter Next in a pretty leading role and as a senior brand strategist, I believe. And as I said, now you're at Ticketmaster in a role that you have been creating. So give us a look into what that journey's been like.
Of course. So, you know, I've been at the agency world for a large part of my career. As you mentioned, when I spoke to you all those years back, I was trying to get an agency job, and I had gotten quite comfortable in that environment. I love the fast pace of the agency world. I love working with a diverse variety of clients because you get to solve so many different types of problems. I think it's a great place to learn. And I think a lot of people have negative things to say about agency life. I didn't really. I mean, yes, it's fast paced and all those things, but yeah, I've found that the sort of the spot that I have is always going to be fast paced. Social media, it's literally like something happens, you have an hour to respond. So I really had a great time there, and a good friend of mine, you know, which goes to speak to the power of networking, kind of like you and I staying in contact. Actually, someone I worked with at my very first job. At Translation Advertising, he reached out and he was like, hey, I got this great role at Twitter and I'm on this really smart team. And what this team does is basically they work like an agency within Twitter. So when a brand comes to Twitter and they have a big campaign, whether it's the Super Bowl or whether it's releasing a new flavor chocolate bar, you know, they come to Twitter to sort of spend media dollars, but sometimes they're also coming looking for ideas and solutions, because it's like, you guys know the platform better than we do. Here's our sort of big idea, or here's our sort of big thing we're putting out. What do you think we should do? Knowing your audience, knowing the platform like you do. So I was part of that team, which was sort of like a special forces, very small team within Twitter that you had access to, you know, when you had these major campaign moments. And obviously there was some dollars amounts connected to getting access to us. It was really exciting. I did a year at Twitter with Jack. You know, starting, Jack would be on calls in like these exotic locations, and you would see the background and you're like, where is he? Like, where is this Oakland room with the huge fan and like 13 windows and there's like big palm trees outside? It's like, where is this?
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, who knows? So that was super interesting. And then obviously Elon acquired the company, and then the company changed again. So it's almost like working at two companies, two very different experiences working there. And I mean, I think I was fortunate to be able to work under two great leaders like that. You know, say what you want about Elon and the direction of the company now, it's like, he is a business leader. You know, we can all agree that he's someone who has a lot of, you know, importance in the business world. So to be able to say, hey, I worked at a company with him, he was joining calls. Sometimes he would be on Zoom chats talking to us and telling us thoughts directly out of his head. It was,
yeah,
you know, not every day I can say I have access to the thoughts of the person who's the world's richest man. So
yeah,
really great experience. And obviously because of some of the shakeup at the company, things changing, it did start to feel like another company for me. So, you know, I was able to get a role at Ticketmaster, which funny enough, actually started trending on Twitter as I was applying for the role. So everything came 360 for me.
That's so awesome. So talk to us about that experience in this role that you have at Ticketmaster. And like, because again, I think some people are like, wow, Twitter, like, how do you get a role with Twitter? How do you get a role like that? I mean, that's got to be one of the most coveted roles at Ticketmaster, at Twitter, as you've described it. So talk to us a bit about your approach to finding that. You talked about it with Twitter, so relationships are really key there. And I think it was a bit different the way you went about it for Ticketmaster. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. Well, one, relationships, like you said. Like, you know, that's why, you know, I think that you're someone who I've always been fond of, because like the importance, again, of relationships and like not giving someone the job, but also creating a relationship with them to say, hey, we should stay in contact, right? And sometimes we should stay in contact means I won't be able to help you for the next 10 years, you know, but at the 10th year, something may happen where we're able to collaborate, you know, yeah. And I think that's super important, you know, having relationships that you're not being so transactional with. And I think just the nature of this sort of industry to win is like a lot of transactional relationships, and like sometimes there's not that immediate return, and I think that's fine. So I think that's one big part of it. And two, which will hopefully be helpful for folks who watch this, is there's a lot of people looking for jobs right now. And I'm talking to a lot of different friends who are either looking because a role has been terminated or looking because it's just that season where they're looking. And it's really about like, how do you differentiate yourself, right? And I always believe in going above and beyond. So, you know, if I'm applying for a role, I love LinkedIn as a platform. So I do see the importance of relationships, but I don't have a relationship with every person at a company who's in a senior position who could impact my hiring. So using LinkedIn as a networking tool, I find is super important. You know, and for me, that's not necessarily getting on LinkedIn and telling people why I'm the smartest or why I'm the coolest. It's more like, you know, reaching out to folks when they do something good. You know, someone posts something on LinkedIn, you don't know them, it's a really impressive story, it's been covered in media, sending them a nice note and saying, hey, here's what I liked about what you did, or
wow,
hey, I saw what you did and I had a question about this. You know, doing a lot of that as I was doing on LinkedIn, like really going through the idea of virtual networking. And I think that was important for me. You know, I didn't have any, you know, as I got the role at Ticketmaster, I didn't know anyone within the organization. It was sort of me using networking, and just being proactive about figuring out what the actual needs were for the job. So I mentioned that the role was sort of, it had started to go viral just because it was such a highly talked about position. So as I saw that, I thought to myself, what are the needs of this role, right? So I didn't allow myself to come into an interview and say, like, I'm going to go to the interview and sort of let the interviewer tell me, like, here's what they need in the role. Naturally, that would happen. I also thought to myself, what is needed in this role? And I sort of came to the meeting with my thoughts on what I thought was needed as well. And I think that's what differentiated me. I wasn't, like, standing back waiting to be told, like, here's what we need to do. I was trying to be proactive about it.
Yeah, I love that. And so In doing so, do you think that it helped to shape the role that you actually stepped into from the time of what was on paper to what you're actually, you know, again, like stepped into on day one, week one?
Yeah, for sure. I'm just about, 3 months in now. And I think anytime you're coming into a new role for an organization, there's sort of expectations on what the role is. But if you're truly someone who's been, been doing something for a long time, it's like you have a general analysis of what's wrong with the patient if brain is beaten, right? But when you go to the surgeon's like, okay, yeah, you said it was a knee issue, but here's the very, very specific issue that's wrong with it, and here's exactly what we need to do to correct it. And hopefully that's the role I can play, is like, really getting in the weeds. And a lot of times when you get in the weeds, you discover a deeper understanding of the problems and the challenges than just looking at it at 30,000 feet. So that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
That process of like assessing and sort of beginning the part two or the 2.0, so to speak.
Yeah, I know, that's so great. And I really wanted to ask that because we have so many like senior people who are part of the audience. And sometimes when we're looking at something on paper, I think it's good for us all to remember that that's just part of it. And that when we actually get in there, we do have the ability, I think, and what you've shown, is to help shape that. What does it actually come to fruition as? And as you said, part of that is being really proactive about the diagnosis, what we're recommending. I think, again, that just is like, I often talk about this audience as being leaders, right? So we really have to take that foot forward, that leading mentality, and then help shape the role that we then take on.
Yeah. And I think, to your point, I know most of your audiences are not, probably some folks are in their first job, but most of them are not on their first job. They there's a little bit more experience based on the people that you speak with. But yeah, I think that's super important. As you're getting into your career at a certain point, I think you're expected to sort of come in and make something your own, regardless of what the sort of job is, title is, if it's new, if it's not. Yeah. There's some sense of, if you've been hired to do a role that you have experience doing, there should be some best practices or something that you come to that day one with that you're able to, help and impact like pretty immediately, regardless of what your title is.
Yeah. And even with like a global, huge company like Ticketmaster, again, I think it can be like intimidating as the type of company I'm going into. Well, maybe for this global entity, it's just supposed to be what's on paper. But I love that story of how you went about it with your approach. And I actually want to pause for a second and go back to what you were saying about using LinkedIn as a networking tool. Mm-hmm. I love everything you said. I completely agree with it. And the dynamic I want to get your thoughts on is I think I've seen a shift in the way people approach LinkedIn and talk on LinkedIn, like the voice that you people have there. And I'll tell you, several years ago, I would sit there and was very passive on LinkedIn. And I don't think it was exactly that I was worried what people would think of me. It was just, I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't know what type of tone I could use there. I thought it needed to be very robotic, professional type thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe it was part of me getting laid off and kind of the first time in the pandemic and me just kind of growing my own wings more. I just took the approach, which is me, you know me by now, it's just be completely authentic. Talk to people as people there and jump into somebody's comments, send them a message. If you come across in an authentic way and you're not just pitch slapping them, then it can actually be really beneficial, I think. But I think it's been a huge change. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's funny. Along the way, I talked to someone about a role, not directly at LinkedIn, but supporting LinkedIn. And one of the things that we talked about was like LinkedIn is having a moment, right? And because of exactly what you're going through, yesterday I saw this really touching post on LinkedIn with someone saying like, hey, I'd gone for like all of these job opportunities. I've done X, I've done Y, I've done Z. I will basically do anything. I want to work. I just want to work. And this was someone, I went to their page. Just someone who was seemed to be an accomplished executive, in their field. They'd been working for 10-ish years. And they were like, pleading on LinkedIn. And then as I read one of the comments, they also dropped the GoFundMe link in there. And they're like, hey, didn't really want to do this, but like, here's a GoFundMe link. And I went to the GoFundMe link and, you know, maybe 10,000 or 7,000 bucks had been donated from folks on LinkedIn. You can see $20, $25. And I'm like, this type of thing was not happening on LinkedIn 2 years ago, right? And if it did happen, you'd be like, this is some sort of scam. But I think people are using LinkedIn, to your point, in a much more authentic way. Yeah. I like to think of it as like, this is probably a bad way to sum it up as a soundbite, but like adult Twitter in some ways, right? It's like business Twitter, and that's what it's turned into.
Yeah.
Business Twitter is probably a better term because people are more freely sharing their thoughts now. I think I'd love to see a study on this, but if you go a couple of years back, every LinkedIn post was like, I'm proud to announce, I'm so humbled. I'm so like all of these things that we are taught to say when we get like an accolade or a new job or something too boasting or braggadocious. And now you're just seeing people just talking, right?
Yeah.
The way they're structuring the text is different. And I look at things like that, right? They're breaking up the text a lot more to really like pound in on certain phrases and using exclamation points and using all caps and getting really creative. So I think all of that is great. I mean, I would imagine the folks at LinkedIn are probably like very excited about the last 24 months because they have to be seeing usage pick up. I'm seeing posts I've never seen posts. I'm seeing people engage. And then, you know, there is that sort of like pendulum swings too far sometimes where it's like, now people are posting stuff on LinkedIn. You're kind of like, oh, is that really for LinkedIn? Probably not. That's probably like a Twitter or a Facebook thing. But I think when it's, you know, LinkedIn has always been one of my favorite platforms. So I'm happy to see them, you know, having this moment where more folks are on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I've been using it as much as I have over the last few years and I've been a part of that sort of swing, just experiencing as it's going through it. I still actually find people who don't know that yet. And so I was talking with a woman recently. She's more of a earlier in her career. And it was like she didn't really realize that. And I was just encouraging her, go on there. And she sees what I post. So it's like, again, you can kind of see the tone I'm using. But I think some of us have to remember that we may have gotten there a little bit earlier than other people. So it's, again, I say this partly as people are leaders and who are in the audience. It's like, remember that like people around us may not know to use it that way. But then you have the opposite side where I saw this post and someone was just railing on someone who posted because there was a typo. And I was like, you know what? If someone is over here, we're the typo police on LinkedIn. Like, you just can't expect perfection out of people and at the same time want authenticity. I think it's a balance, and it's just understanding that people who are on the platform, just like any social platform, I would think, are at different stages of their adoption.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting too, as we're talking about it, it's like, you know, you think of, oh, there's a meme I've seen. There's like me on Instagram, me on Facebook, me on LinkedIn, and me. And now those are becoming more moving towards the center too. And I think that's also what's happening when you think about what's happening with LinkedIn. It's like, you can no longer be like super cool on Instagram and you're like drinking cocktails and you got like your shirt open to like the third button on Instagram. And then you go on LinkedIn and it's like, humbled and proud to, I mean, yes, two in the same can exist, but I think what people are realizing is like, as someone is friends with you across different networks, you know, you start to like, just show off that one true personality, which I think is like, it's not easy, I will say. I mean, even me as an individual, right? I struggle with like, okay, what is it? Do I post this? Do I not post different things?
Yeah.
You know, I'm an expert, right? I'm supposed to help people with this and I still struggle with it myself. So, I also tell people, especially executives when I work with them, it's, hey, by the way, this is hard for everyone.
Yeah,
it's hard for everyone to post and talk about themselves, which is why it's great to have someone you bring in from the outside who can sort of look at you and assess and say, here's what you're really good at. Here's the content that's performing really well. Here are like how you do these things. Cause, you know, most of us have trouble, you know, just highlighting, talking about ourselves in that way. So it's good to have that other voice.
Yeah. But that's such a great point, and it's such a big pain point, as you said, of figuring out your voice and how do you use that. And I know it may sound to some people like be authentic is pretty obvious, but not everybody knows exactly like what does that translate to. So whether it's a brand or it's a person, like, do you have any recommendations or, you know, again, like tips around finding that voice and or your style or whatever you want to say, choosing to even join the platform in the first place? So again, whether it's a, you could say either one, but brand or person, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for people, it's like kind of just do it, right? It's,
yeah,
I think most of the people who post frequently on social media, and without you and I even discussing this, I would imagine you do the same, is like, they have a sense of like what they're going to put out in the future. Yeah. They're not making these decisions. They're not waking up and saying, hey, today I'm going to post. Like, they actively are telling themselves, hey, I have to hit LinkedIn X amount of times. I have to hit Instagram. Like, it takes work. It's like going to the gym. And most people wouldn't expect that. They think that the people who are performing really well are just like so witty and so cool that, you know, all their photos are good and all of their sort of LinkedIn updates are good and all their tweets are funny. And the reality of it is that they may be all those things, but they actually have to also put time into it to actually be good. You know, unless they're like a, you know, Kevin Hart level, Dave Chappelle level, like, you know, creator where they can like really think of these things probably on the fly. So I think that that's really important. When I think people, it's like, one, you have to sort of be proactive and tell yourself, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to post on LinkedIn at least 4 times a month. And you have to like challenge yourself to do that and to hit that bar. For brands, when I think about finding your voice, I think it's about, you know, figuring out everything else happening elsewhere and then figuring out how you show up on social media. So probably goes without saying for your audience, but like social media should not be in a silo. Like when I look at your brand everywhere else and it's like super serious, and then I come to your Twitter page, let's say, and you're being like snarky as Wendy's, I'm like, I don't get it, right? Or, you know, this just actually happened, and every year this happens and there's stories about it. Like then when you have something like Pride Month, which in June, and that happens, and you know, some brands may do like a rainbow colored icon on different social media platforms, right? And that's probably a decision that's made pretty easily, right? Feel safe enough. It's Pride Month. Let's do something to show our love for the community. But if the company is not doing other things to back it up, then that can get you in a lot of trouble, you know? So I think like little things like that, as brands think about finding their voice, is just making sure, again, it's authentic. From like the smallest touches, which is just like changing your icon to celebrate something, like seems safe enough. That seems like a decision, like, you know, that decision comes.
Why didn't you do it?
They're like, yeah, this seems safe enough. What's the worst that could happen? And then some poor person makes that choice and they do it. And then they don't realize other implications across their company. Yeah. So I think those things are super important. You know, that's something I do. Anytime I'm in a social role, I don't just talk to social folks. I talk to HR folks. I talk to PR folks. I talk to marketing folks, because I feel like all of those different, I talk to legal folks, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, all of those inputs are important as you think about what you should and shouldn't do. And it's not just about thinking about, oh, this is be really cool on social media. It's thinking about how that can impact a larger business too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when social, or the last, like, obviously numerous years by now, but it was kind of like, oh, cool and nice. And the new young savvy person coming in could just have it and, you know, do some posts at hashtags. And I think that, like, again, over time, it is literally the window in which consumers can jump in the most accessibly, the most easily. And so to your point, what I'm saying is, like, for those listening, I think one of the worst things you can do is downplay the importance of it or the access that people feel that they have through those channels. So again, having the right person, such as yourself, leading that space, is just so critical. You cannot risk, to your point, being kind of lackadaisical with the channel. I think if you do it well, or don't do it at all.
Yeah. And I feel lucky because I sort of became like, and it was in parallel to me getting more senior, but it's like, you go from like the least important person to like one of the most important people, right? Because see, like when I first started working in social media roles, it was literally that. It was whoever the youngest person in the room is, you're in charge of the social media. And basically do stuff on the social media. You're taking content from other places, you put it there, and you're just doing that. And literally over the years, you've seen this go get more and more important to the social media role is now more and more important. Now to the point that you're seeing, you know, people who are CMOs of companies and such rise through the ranks of having been digital, social, now all of a sudden they're the chief marketing officer because digital is the most important channel for a company, right? So like that's something that can happen now where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if you said, hey, the person who posts on your MySpace page is going to one day be the CMO, you would get laughed out of the room, right? It was like, no, that would never happen. Like the person who's responsible for buying the billboards is going to be the CMO, right? And now it's changed. So I like that.
Yeah, that's such a great point. So what about a brand? Because not all brands are on social. And so talk to us about that. I'm assuming you feel not all brands should be on social. But what is your take on that? And if a brand is going to decide they do want to be on it, again, like, are there any thoughts about that? Like, why would someone not be on it and why should they?
Yeah, I think you said it earlier, if you're not going to do it right, don't be on it, right? Park your page, put a logo on it, and put a link to your website and just leave it there. I'm sure I could probably think of some, but there's little, you know, reason that I would find. I mean, maybe if you're doing like some top secret covert operations, you would not have a social media page, but everything from when I think of like the New Jersey Twitter account, which got really popular and really captured New Jersey and was talking about bagels and it was talking about fun stuff. And every once in a while, they would put in things you knew about New Jersey, right? People know people have a lot of state pride. They were able to bring that state pride out, right? All of a sudden, now you have people who are not even from New Jersey following our handle. It's great for the state, right? I think about the FSA, you know, is it FSA or Homeland Security? I forget which one it is. One of them has a really cool Instagram account where they're literally, I believe it's Homeland Security, where they're showing all of the TSA. They're showing like all of the fun things that they take out of people's suitcases, you know, in TSA. Yeah, they have lots of super high engagement on their Instagram channel. And I think they're doing a great job with the content, but like when you go to their page, that's what you're seeing, right? You're seeing like all of these different things and how they're telling the stories in a fun way. And I got so excited by these examples. I forgot your original question. I'm sorry.
No, I'm so glad you said those examples because it actually goes back. I was asking like if someone doesn't have it, like why wouldn't they and should they? But again, like you're just saying TSA, you wouldn't usually think. I mean, maybe for customer service is how they thought of social in the past, but now they're actually using it to be engaging and probably to try to get a little bit of fanfare in a positive way, like some positive sentiment. Because I don't know too many people who love going through the TSA experience. You like dread it, right?
And I'm looking here on Instagram, they have 1 million followers, you know, and 2,500 posts. And their sort of tagline is travel tips and dad jokes, right? And you're just doing that over and over again. And it's like, no matter what you feel about them, when you get to social media and you're about to complain and you probably read the first couple posts, you're like, oh, these folks aren't that bad. You know, you're like less angry. You got your lotion taken from you as you're going through security line.
Yeah, no, that is such a great, I'm so glad we said that. Because again, like you could use it to help create positive sentiment if your brand isn't necessarily known as operating that way or something. So but that intentionality is so huge for it. So I'm glad we pointed to that. So while we have you, because of, you know, you being such an expert in the space, I want to do a little bit of a hit list on your takes. So we talked a little about it earlier, biggest pain point facing people in this space. Anything different you want to add? What's your take on that biggest pain point? People or brands?
Biggest pain point, I would say, is just trying to evolve, trying to keep up with the evolving landscape.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just when you have mastered TikTok, now there's threads. Just when you have Threads mastered, now Twitter has turned into X. You know, just when you have that mastered, there'll be another thing. So I think that's it. And it's like now when these things happen, people expect brands to be on there day one, right? Yeah. When everyone went to Threads, people expected brands who are active on social media to be on Threads that day, that week, pretty immediately, right? And when you think about like creating a channel strategy, normally it would be a lot more time put into something like that. But in today's age, it's like the consumer is here on day one, they want you there on day two, day three. So I think that continues to be a challenge, is like just keeping up. And that's,
wow,
you know, that's the job of folks like myself and yourself and other professionals who do this and helping make recommendations. So I think that's probably the biggest pain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks, it's keeping up on it also means if you kind of buy what's going on in the landscape, air quotes, have to be there right away. Remember, it evolves. It doesn't have to be perfect right away. You can kind of tiptoe a little bit at the beginning and then figure it out as you're going. So again, I talk about evolution all the time, as you know. Anything blowing your mind, I guess, in the good or the bad way in this space?
You know, I'm interested to see. There were some articles that came out last week about how ChatGPT was now starting to like almost like slow down in its accuracy, output, etc. I feel like there's some like turning up and turning down of that faucet happening, because I feel like it came out of the gate and it was just like, wow, this is going to change the world. And then there were some leaders who were very vocal and saying like, hey, we got to sort of like temper this a little bit. And now, mm-hmm, less than a month later, you're starting to see articles come out saying, hey, ChatGPT is not that accurate, or the accuracy is going down. And my thought is it going down, or are we just like turning the faucet down a little bit and like slowly releasing it? So that's something I'm paying a lot of attention to, kind of not directly related to social, but I think as AI gets plugged into social media, whether it's through social listening tools, content creation tools, other ways, you could imagine a world where, you know, there's a platform that's digesting a bunch of conversation, taking all those inputs, and then crafting social media posts that they're saying, hey, based on everything we've heard, these are the type of messages you should be putting out. And that's available to a social media strategist in 2-3 seconds. Like, there's no reason that is not being worked on. And I think it is. So I'm just waiting and just paying close attention to that.
Yeah, it is. It's funny because like some ways we have to hurry up, and other times it's like hurry up, slow down to then keep going again, especially in this space, you know, because stuff hits the market, but you do have to kind of let it simmer a little bit, see what's rising, what disappears. So that's a great point. Anything played out?
I hate to say, I mean, no one's really on Clubhouse anymore. There are some folks still on here.
Okay.
Yeah, I said
because I'm not an Apple person, which I know, shock and horror, but
I think Clubhouse is sort of slowing down. Audio obviously has slowed down a bit. Be Real, I'm interested to see what happens with Be Real. I'm still watching, and I know a lot of folks that do use Be Real, but I've started to hear people over the last 6 months say, hey, I'm not using it as much as I used to. So that's another one I'm paying close attention to. But I think the audio and the sort of Clubhouse moment is kind of past, unless someone approaches it in a fresh new way.
Right. That's a good point. Is there anything you think is misunderstood?
No, but I think the biggest trend I would say in marketing, and as I think of like stuff impacting our world, is how to connect activity happening to the actual revenue. Like, how do you connect a bunch of really good social media posts to bringing in money? Like, and having a clear line between that. Some people don't see that clear line. So I would say that's a little bit misunderstood.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many times I still hear people thinking that, oh, just do a post on social and you're going to sell a bunch of stuff. I still think there's a lot of misunderstanding in that space. That's a really great point. You mentioned Threads earlier. Give us your take on Threads.
I'm on it. I was on it on day one. I was number 300 and something thousand. I have the little badge here.
I was going to say, do you have a badge?
Yeah, it's on your Instagram. And I thought it was pretty impressive. It's like 20 million people. And I was 300,000 to get it. So I guess that makes me an early adopter.
Well,
I'm interested to see what they can do. I mean, I think that, you know, I love Instagram. You know, I think Instagram did a great job with stories and evolving to that. You know, now they're trying to evolve to something new. So, you know, let's see how they do. I think they've been very open about features that are missing right now. So, you know, if they're willing to solve those issues, I think that they'll be in a good spot.
That's a really great point.
So the last thing I want to ask you, because we've hit so many topics here, what are the key takeaways that you want to make sure that the audience gets from your episode?
Key takeaways. Since I know a lot of folks are looking for roles right now and applying, I think using LinkedIn, don't underestimate the power of LinkedIn. Don't think that just by applying for a role and going and click apply, easy apply, like you're on to the next job. Like, you have to reach out to the recruiter. You have to reach out to the hiring manager. You have to see if you have any connections and commons. You really need to like push all of those buttons if it's the right role for you, especially if you're going for a more senior role, because I think that even showing that approach and that dedication to like how you even plan your personal career will have a big impact to how people see you at the company. So I think that will be my message. I'd hope everyone will take away from my journey and sort of finding this new opportunity. I had to be very proactive in that. And then this, the second bit is, you know, thinking as we think about these new tools, just keep in mind, like, you have to experiment with them. But, you know, it's not necessarily your job on day one when a new platform comes out to say, hey, I got it. I know the strategy. This is how we should be, which a lot of people are in my space are falling into that because you feel like, hey, in order to be an expert, I have to tell everyone at my company that I know how to use something that just came out yesterday better than them because it's my job. No, I tell folks at my company all the time, hey, I don't spend a lot of time on TikTok. I probably spend an hour a day on TikTok, which is not a lot of time. I know folks who spend hours on TikTok. If you're spending more time there than me, tell me what you're seeing. Give me ideas to help inform. You know, my role is not to be the all-knowing one. It's really inputs and develop strategies. So I think that's the other thing is, you know, leveraging the people at your company and not feeling like if you are in a social role like me, that means that you need to be the best at each of the platforms. It means you need to take all those inputs and use them in the right way.
Yeah, those are such great points. Thank you so much. And Javid, I know you have to go, so I'm going to let you run. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, for being amazing. And we're all going to be watching and seeing what Ticketmaster is doing in social. So, and knowing that you're behind it is pretty awesome. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to coming back a third time. I'll see you soon. All right.